This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
I'm Bruce Naltaedua, and it's my pleasure to present Astro Chats on Thursday afternoons just after the 3 o'clock news. I'll be speaking today with Eric Bristow, who is a returning guest speaker from the Hawke's Bay Astronomical Society and an amateur astronomer. On Thursday, I'll introduce you to Eric. Please tune your radio to 1431 AM or 104.7 FM and give Astro Chats a try. Even if you are not by your radio, you can pick up Astro Chats from your radio from Radio Hawke's Bay website at www.radiohawkesbay.org.nz. Welcome to Astro Chats, the show where we explore the wonders of the cosmos, discuss astronomy, and delve into the mysteries of our universe. I'm your host, Bruce Naltaerua, and I'm thrilled to have you with us again as we start 2026 on this stellar journey. Whether you're an astronomy enthusiast or a casual stargazer, there's something here for everyone. Today we have an exciting lineup. First, we have our astronomical highlights as we discuss this month's stars and other stellar objects, as outlined by the update from RASNZ, or the Royal Astronomical Society of New Zealand. Then we will have our special guest, returning guest I should say, Eric Bristow, and we'll be chatting about all things astronomy and space. But let's kick things off and look at this month's star highlights. So the evening sky in February, planets-wise, we have Jupiter, is in the a bright evening star in the north after sunset, setting later than most objects. The moon is near it on the 27th. Saturn sits low in the west and sets by late evening. A thin crescent moon is near it on the 20th. Venus begins to reappear low in the western twilight late in the month. Bright stars and Orion region. Sirius and Canopus are the brightest stars high in the sky. Orion stands out with Rigel, Betelgeuse, and the three belt stars known as the Belt of Orion, and the Orion Nebula is visible in binoculars. Procyon marks Orion's smaller dog. Taurus and other northern sky objects. Aldebaran, which is in Taurus, and the Hyades from Taurus's face. The Pleiades and Matariki cluster is nearby and good in binoculars. Capella is low in the northern sky. Southern sky highlights. Of course, we have the Crux or Southern Cross and Alpha and Beta Centauri, known as the Pointers, that are prominent. The Milky Way is brightest towards the Crux. The Magellanic Clouds, 47 Tucanae, which is an open cluster, and of course Omega Centauri, are visible on dark nights, offering fine binocular and telescopic views. Overall, February's sky features bright planets early in the evening and rich southern deep sky objects for binocular observers. And that were the highlights for February, stars, planets, and other objects. Now, let's actually move on to our second item, which we actually have our returning guest speaker, Eric Bristow, who's from the Hawke's Bay Astronomical Society. And Eric joined me at least two times last year and is going to be joining us probably at least another one or two times this year. And welcome back, Eric.
Well, any time.
It's good to have you on the program today. So tell us what you're going to be talking about with us and our listeners today.
Well, today I always thought that we would talk about gravity wave detection. This is one of the newest things that we have in astronomy. In 1916, Albert Einstein predicted that gravity waves would be released when two immense objects crashed into each other.
Oh, yes.
And the first historic detection of gravity waves was announced in February the 11th on 2016, which is exactly 100 years later. And it was caused by two black holes. One was 29 solar masses, that's 29 times bigger than our sun, and the other one was 36 times the sun's mass. The energy with that collision was equivalent to about three solar masses, was converted into gravity wave radiation in a fraction of a second. The two things that we can measure are two binary black holes crashing into each other, or two binary neutron stars crashing into each other, or a black hole and a binary star.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so only the biggest things can be seen. Now, during this first merger between 26 and a 36 and a 29, the equivalent energy mass of the sun was three times the mass of the sun, was released in 0.2 seconds.
Oh, goodness me.
These are big bangs. And just before colliding, these objects reached velocities between 30% and 60% of the speed of light. But this happened billions of years ago, and it took 1.3 billion years for the gravity wave travelling at the speed of light before it reached us.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we work? Now, Albert Einstein said that he gave us space-time, and as a gravity wave washes over us, if you imagine graph paper, it has an X and a Y lines. If the Y is from my feet to my head and the X is around my stomach and the waistline, as the gravity wave washes over us, I'll become slightly taller and slightly thinner.
I see.
And then the other half of the sine wave that washes over, I'll become slightly shorter and slightly tubbier. All right. Now, we don't notice this in real life, so we need a very sophisticated piece of machinery to measure this for us. So what they did was they built two 4-kilometre-long tunnels that exactly at right angles to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And in them, they have to be perfectly straight, so you have to counteract the curve of the Earth. You have a mirror at the other end.
Yeah.
And at the feed point where the two tubes meet, you have a laser beam. Now, laser beams generate sine waves. We call it coherent light.
Yes.
Although we can't see it, it's a single frequency, the same as pushing a key on a piano. You get a single note. So the laser source looks at a beam-splitting mirror, which is exactly at 45 degrees to one of the tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a dichotic mirror. I'm not sure. But anyway, half the energy from the sine wave, our laser beam, is reflected and goes down one arm, and the other half of our laser beam goes straight through the mirror and goes down the second arm. At the other end of these two arms, there's a reflection mirror which sends a signal back.
Mm-hmm.
It's 4 kilometres long. We ricochet the light backwards and forth 400 times, and this gives us a beam journey of 1,600 kilometres per round trip. It's the equivalent of having these two tubes 1.6 kilometres long.
Mm-hmm.
The beams are then reconstructed back through our mirror and go to a light detector. Now, they left the laser as a single sine wave. They go down each arm as a sine wave, and they were in step when they left the laser. When they come back, if they are out of step, we know that a gravity wave has washed over us.
Ah.
And we can measure this. Now, at the moment, our machinery detection is equivalent to a fraction of a single proton. So a single nucleus of a hydrogen atom, we can see a slight difference between these two beams. And that is state-of-the-art technology today.
Sure is.
Now, the universe just loves sine waves. They're everywhere. If you watch the waves coming in at West Shore, they're a ripple of sine waves. You've got the crest and the trough, and then the next crest and the trough. If you look at the weather reports on your computer and it gives the high and low tide, they are a sine wave. High tide, low tide.
Yes.
High tide, low tide. A child on a swing. Each end of the swing, you're at the high point. In the centre is the low point. And so a swing, a pendulum, gives you sine waves. Phase of the moon. New moon to full moon and back is a sine wave. The sun's path, the height above the horizon, measured at midday between winter and summer, it goes up and down and will produce a sine wave if you plot it. But in this case, you have to use sidereal time to measure it exactly at the same time each day.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll need to look up what sidereal time is to get a definition on your computer.
Yes.
Right, because this detail is so fine, the mounts for the mirrors have to be so well adjusted that they absorb any vibration from the ground. Our planet's riddled with earthquakes every day. And we had a gentleman come to our monthly meeting at the astronomy club, and he gave a demonstration of the mounting for these gravity wave mirror detector mirrors. And basically, you take a swing, and then you mount a second swing from the seat of the first one, and that will support the second one, is where the mirror's mounted. And any vibration, the two swings tend to cancel it out.
Ah.
It was so genius, and he had a pocket of string, and he demonstrated to it, and it just worked so perfectly. And everything's a sine wave, and you can make a sine wave easy. It's all related to a circle. So if you draw a circle on a piece of paper, cut it through the centre from side to side, label it 9 o'clock on one side and 3 o'clock on the other.
Yes.
And then you slide one of the pages to one side until the lines match up, the 3 and a 9. And you look at the outside edge, you have a sine wave.
Yep.
So they're everywhere. Now, Einstein said that it was gravitation. Now, if you get another piece of paper, draw a big circle one end, small circle the other, call the big one the sun, small one the earth, draw a straight line from the centre of the sun to the centre of the earth, that is the gravitational pull of the sun on the earth. And if that was true and the only force acting, we would have crashed into the sun long ago. But we don't, because we are orbiting. We have orbital energy, which keeps us at the same distance from the sun, more or less continuously. Another circle. Now, it's the decay of the orbit between two black holes or two neutron stars. The energy of the orbit is what we call gravitational waves. But Albert Einstein named it gravitational waves, and so that's what it's called.
It's fantastic. It's really good to, I like the way you put that, Eric, the fact that gravity is something that we as scientists don't understand a lot about. We actually see the effect of gravity.
Mm.
For example, Sir Isaac Newton and his whole story about apparently an apple falling from a tree, actually he thought, okay, the apple's falling from the tree to the earth, but the earth is attracting that apple towards it. It's the same kind of thing as you've talked about with the earth and the sun.
The sun is so much bigger, its gravitational force is so much stronger.
So gravity is everywhere.
Mm. Yes, and we know about gravity because when you drop something heavy, it's going to land on your foot.
It will.
Guaranteed. Now, we now switch to a summer party that we had. Every year in January, we have our Central Star Party, our Tukituk River. And the year is 2020. And the interesting thing is Betelgeuse. So if I could get Bruce to tell us where we can see Betelgeuse easily in the night sky, because I can see it when I get home from volunteering at the planetarium on a Sunday night and stand on my front lawn. It's up there to my left.
Yep. Betelgeuse is actually one of the stars of the constellation Orion. Now, Orion is actually our major constellation we have in summer here in the southern hemisphere. In New Zealand, we can see it high in the sky at the moment. And when I was talking about the February stars, it stands out, and we have several bright stars. Rigel's one of them. Betelgeuse is another. Now, Betelgeuse is the star at the bottom of Orion. And it can actually, if you look at it, have a kind of an orangey tinge.
It's down and to the left.
Correct.
From where I'm looking at it.
In the northern hemisphere, it's actually depicted as a hunter, a man holding, kneeling, actually on one knee, and actually holding a club and a shield. And he's got a sword. All right, actually, and then we call that the belt stars of Orion, those three stars. But Betelgeuse is one of those interesting stars that actually is meant to be on Orion's shoulder. But here in the southern hemisphere, we call Orion a pot.
It's upside down to us.
It's upside down to us here in the southern hemisphere. So we have a different view of it. So that's where you can find Orion high in the night sky, in the eastern sky. It is, and then you can actually see the belt stars, which are the three stars that are in a line, and then you can find and go down, you can find Betelgeuse quite easily.
Right. Now, in 2020, as I was saying, we were at the Central Star Party, and Gary Sparks was the president of the club at that time, and Betelgeuse was doing a great dimming. And this was very important because astronomy had no idea what we were thinking. It may go getting ready for a supernova. And Gary mentioned to me that to live in a time when we saw men go to the moon and then a supernova of the size of Betelgeuse, its brightness dropped by 60%. And we had no idea what was going on. It's a red star. It looks red from where we can see it. But at the same time, the gravity wave detectors detected a very large event. Now, with two of them, you can get a direction, but you can never tell whether it was coming or going. So you end up with two of what they call treasure maps. One of them was right on top of Betelgeuse, and that lit us up. And NASA turned every telescope we had on the planet and in space towards Betelgeuse. And we threw everything at it. And if we could have got a kitchen sink and threw that into Betelgeuse, they would have done it too. And the net result of everything looking at it was nothing.
Oh dear.
Right. The gravity wave was not causing the great dimming. But we learnt something.
Certainly did.
Right.
I remember there was quite a bit of excitement as you were talking
about. Oh, the whole world was excited.
You know, because, I mean, those of you who don't, our listeners who don't know, a supernova explosion is something that's quite rare to see in our own galaxy. You see them in other galaxies and they go off all the time.
But you need big telescopes or even a reasonable telescope. You need to know exactly that a new star is formed in the heaven.
Now, Betelgeuse is something like 642 light years away from Earth or the sun.
So, we'll be quite safe.
So it's quite safe for us, but it is local.
Yeah, and it will be bright.
It will be bright. So if it has gone supernova and we don't know, because remember we are looking at starlight that's over 640 light years in terms of 640 years away, it could have already happened, this explosion. We're just waiting for the light to reach us.
Now, these radio these gravity wave telescopes, they are so primitive. Although we think it's sophisticated today, it's the equivalent of Galileo's first telescope.
Yes.
And we can only see the very biggest things and the things that are closest to us. And like all astronomers, we need a bigger one. And it costs money. Well, the Earth's only so big, and to get a straight line on the Earth, that's the size of the Earth, you'd have to go right through the middle.
Yes.
But the one that could possibly be of interest, and the ones we're doing today, is we're looking at pulsars. And we have look at two pulsars that are 90 degrees apart, and they give very accurate pulses. And we measure these pulses for any variation with respect from one to the other. This will give us a gravity wave detector. That's as long as the distance is between our two pulsars and us.
So remember, a pulsar, as Eric has been talking about, he's talked about neutron stars.
Yes, so and pulsars we discussed it last year.
Yeah, we did. So pulsars are essentially neutron stars that actually act a little bit like a lighthouse. And so when we have a pulse coming from a neutron star in terms of electromagnetic radiation, or we call it a flash, then we can detect that, and we call it a pulsar.
Now, so if a gravity wave comes through, it'll squeeze and stretch the space between us and the pulsar. And the ones we've got running at the moment are the Parker's Pulse Timing Array in Australia, the Nanogravity in North America, and the European Pulsar Timing Array in Europe. And this is something we can do easily from the Earth, and we're hoping to find more about the universe. And particularly if we get a gravity wave event and a neutron event and our neutrino detectors, it gives us a position to point our other telescopes there, see what we can find out is what's going on.
Yes. So, and you mentioned neutrinos, and neutrinos are what stars actually emit, especially those who are about to go supernova, are quite a few of them. And we have some neutrino detectors here on Earth, but they're actually underground. They're almost like in bodies of water.
We're detecting the flash of one of the molecules in the water being hit by a neutrino.
Correct. So it's a bit of a different way of doing it. But I must admit, gravity waves is something that is emerging as something we're learning more about.
Oh, this is the new kid on the block.
It is.
We're also looking at the cosmic microwave background, looking for a signature in specific patterns of how the light waves align with one another. But this is proving not very easy. And we got mistook dust in the Milky Way for its cosmic quarry. You see, so we're right at the beginning.
We're certainly. You know,
and the more it's called astronomy across all ranges of frequencies. So from right up from X-rays and cosmic rays all the way down to radio waves, and then gravity waves.
Yep. So it crosses across all the
multi-mode astronomy.
Multi-mode. That's the one.
That's what I was thinking.
Exactly. Well, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming in and talking to us about gravity waves today. We might need to have another chat about this, actually.
Well, if we could bottle part of it. Particularly when I'm slightly taller and slightly thinner, we could make a fortune.
Excellent. Anyway, we're just about out of time, so I'm just going to actually tell you about how you can learn more about space and astronomy. And Eric did actually mention that we have an astronomical society or club that meets every second Wednesday of the month. But we also have a planetarium here in the Hawke's Bay. And that is in Napier, on Napier Boys High School grounds. And it is open every Sunday evening from 7 to 9pm. We don't close it all, even around Christmas time. Online bookings can be taken through our website, and also FPOS is available if you just want to rock up and actually pay. Pricing, adults are $12, students $8, seniors or unwaged $10, and families up to six people, a total of $30. So not an expensive evening. So check out our website. So you can just Google Napier Planetarium or Hawke's Bay Planetarium and you'll find us. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to Eric for coming in for Astro Chats. Remember to keep looking up at the stars, and keep wondering, keep having those questions, and join us next time for more Cosmic Conversations. Until then, remember, Ad Astra, and look to the stars.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.